again, this is Charlie Belfontaine, and you're listening to the Home Buyers Hour on WCPT. Good morning, everybody. In the studio, we got Cody Shipp and Patrick Loftus, a little Ola. And remotely, we got Joey Matthews from the VA Loan Nerd. Cody, if you don't mind, give us a rundown. How do people get a hold of you? Tell us about you, your business, and how long you've been doing this. And say hi to someone special.
Hi, Kristen. The only special person in my life besides my two dogs. Cody Shipp, Dreamtown Real Estate, coming up on 7 years. You can find me on all social media platforms, including Google Stuffs, Shipp Homes. That's SHIPPHOMES. Phone number is 312-450-0665.
I'm curious on what you're doing with the Google, what you mentioned on there. So maybe we could talk about that a little bit today. Patrick, please.
Oh, yes. Well, hi. Good morning. Good morning. My name is Patrick Loftus. I'm a real estate lawyer. What does that mean? It means that when you buy or sell your house, you should call me to make sure things go smoothly. Otherwise, I can't, you know, I can't tell you that any of those other guys are going to, you know, make sure things go smoothly. You know, they seem as often as not wanting to, you know, just rock the boat and make things as unsmooth as they can. And that's why I am so important in these transactions, says me. Find me on social media. Well, yeah. I mean, you know, you presumably. find me on social media. Find me on Instagram, I think, is one of them, Loftus_law. And then find me on TikTok is one of the other ones, at Loftus Law.
Thank you. And Joey, if you don't mind, give us your rundown.
Why, hello, Joey Matthews. You can call or text me at 630-235-2405. You can find me at thevaloannerd.com or across all social media as at thevaloannerd.
Excellent. Okay, we'll turn that music off. So tell me what's going on in the rates, Joey. I want to get all the hoo-ha before we talking about other stuff.
Let's just get used to the world that we live in. Let's never talk about refinancing again. Let's get used to the world that we're living in. There will come a time one day. When will that time be? Stop listening to anybody, including me. We don't know what's going to happen, right? Jerome Powell, the Fed, Jerome Powell has a meeting, a press meeting at 1:30 p.m. Central Time today, May 1st, Wednesday, to tell us that the Fed is not interested in cutting rates right now. I don't know how hawkish he will be, but obviously the idea of a rate cut in 2024 is slowly getting smaller and smaller and smaller. But at the end of the day, the markets will shift. There will come a time. Will it be tomorrow? It won't be tomorrow. But there will come a time when things are more happy. And hey, at the end of the day, if you're breathing, it's a good freaking day, okay? So don't lose your mind about the market. The market's the market.
Joey, is everything okay?
I'm working from home right now. It's like a different vibe.
This is, you know, I can send someone over to do like a wellness check if, I mean...
You know what? The JOLTS report, the jobs opening and report came in today, and it came in super light. But we still have non-farm payrolls coming in on Friday, and I don't know if the Fed is going to have a sneak peek at that before they release anything today. I would love for that to be the situation. Well, I might love for that to be the situation if it's coming in light. But obviously, the rate decision today, they're not going to raise rates. I'm sorry, they're not going to lower rates. But again, we have a flat treasury. It's been up 20% since January 1st, the 10-year treasury yield. So, I mean, we're just rocking and rolling, man. We're just living the dream. At the end of the day, people are buying houses. They're going to. There's a lot of people that believe they're stuck because they have a 2% rate. If you have a 2% rate and you're in a condo and you got married, now you have three kids, you're probably not very happy. You got to choose happiness.
I recommend choosing happiness.
Joey, I want you to look in the mirror, and I want you to say what you just said to us, and I want you to choose happiness. Okay, is that
you're,
okay?
you're good enough and people like you.
Oh my God. What was that? Guy Smiley or something?
No, it's Stuart Smiley. Guy Smiley. Guy Smiley here.
To Sesame Street? Yeah, or what is it?
Sesame Street. He was the game show host.
No, but there was a guy on SNL. I can't think of his name.
Stuart Smiley.
Yeah, it was Stuart Smiley.
Stuart Smiley, not Guy Smiley. Yes,
there's a whole movie about it.
No, geez, that's awesome. But no, seriously, when we're going through a recession, or when we're coming into a recession, that's where we lower the rates so that we can spark the economy. And inflation, they're not going to, you know, they raise it just to slow it down. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much basic real estate mortgage 101, isn't it?
I would say it's general economy 101.
Cool.
I believe we call that monetary policy.
It's a whole vibe.
I'm sitting next to Jerome Powell, huh?
You're sitting next to Joey Nostradamus, you know, predicting the future.
What's good about this is the fact that, like, Joey's got the, whatever the opposite of the Midas touch is, that's what Joey has when it comes to predicting our financial future. So him being so,
over here.
The cold touch.
Him being so bearish and glum about the current state of affairs really has me feeling.
We're going to be rich.
I like that.
Yeah.
Millions.
I'm feeling amazing. I can't wait to buy more insurance so that can
get a Tesla, get a Cybertruck, dude.
Yeah. Get a Cybertruck and also make sure that you get the complimentary AAA coverage so that every 2 weeks when you're on the side of the road kicking the tire and screaming Elon's name, you've got someone to come rescue you.
Bird killers talk. Elon. We're going to stop that right now. We're getting to real work here, all right? Today, one of the biggest things we're going to talk about is negotiations during the real estate transaction. So my question to Corey right now is going to be...
Charlie, you did it again.
Cody, I did do it again, didn't I? I will say that one of my best friends, his name is Corey. So that is common that you mix up the names when you do that. So Cody, I apologize.
Poor.
It is, but it's the only one I got. But anyway, so are we going to be talking about the first round of negotiations or the second round of negotiations during a real estate transaction? I'll let you choose first.
Yeah, I guess we'll start on the first and end with the second, right?
Sounds good. Yeah. So the first round of negotiations takes place right after somebody visited a house 45 times and they decide that they're going to go ahead and buy it. Tell me what the process is and how does that come into play when somebody does any sort of negotiations ahead of time?
Yeah. So it's changed. I'm coming up on year 7 in this. 5, 6, 7 years ago, you could see a property twice before submitting an offer. Now you're lucky to get in there for 2 minutes to make your decision. Back then, you could say, okay, well, you know, let's throw the kitchen sink at them and ask for, I want a new washer, a new dryer, because those are old. You know, that wasn't realistic, but you could ask for it. Finally, maybe end up somewhere in between, but
as we do that on round one,
Wow. Patrick might disagree, but
no, I agree. I negotiate all of that stuff before you settle on a price, because once you settle on a price, I really have far less leverage to get you stuff. I mean, you know, your signature has a tremendous amount of value, regardless of what the market looks like, and so I'm you know, fully on board with what Cody's saying. Is make sure Corey, don't leave anything that you could have negotiated before you arrive at the material terms of the contract for afterward.
Yeah. And now, I mean, honestly, Charlie, I've seen some of the weirdest stuff. I've had people offer things that you wouldn't believe to get a house in the past couple of months.
Give me.
Yeah. I've had people offer money outside of a transaction. I've heard of people offering.
Really?
Like they say, okay, my parents don't have the money now. They're going to refinance their house. Tell them we'll give them an extra $10,000 to $15,000 outside. And obviously, Patrick's not in the know of that, but...
Nor is the lender.
Yeah, nor is the lender.
I was going to say, it just sounds...
Sorry, Joey.
Sounds bad.
Yeah, you know? But I've heard stories, right? Like, you've got people in the Gold Coast that were offering cars to come with their units outside of the sale. I've never done that. I want to make that known. But as of right now, the weirdest thing I've had somebody do is offer to pay the special for a seller, which it was a part of the negotiations up front. There was 7 or 8 offers on the place, and they're doing very well. They've got money on hand. They can say, okay, you know, $25,000 special. I'll stomach the cost of that. We're going to be here for 10 to 15 years. Everybody else wanted to use the loan or offset the loan and artificially inflate the price to get the money back and pay for the special. Realistically, what that means to the seller is it's a crapshoot, and you're saying, I don't know, I might get this, but you need it to appraise out at that point, which you're kind of up, you know, whatever creek if that doesn't appraise out. So
doesn't it also affect your property taxes as well?
Everything. Not necessarily. No. That's the assessor's got its very own. I mean, there's a whole set of rules and laws about how they have to go about evaluating properties. I mean, the assessor is not doing an appraisal. There's not enough resources available. You know, even if you gave them, you know, triple 10x the budget, it just wouldn't make sense. Cook County has more pins, more individual parcels of real estate than any other single jurisdiction in the country. So they're using a lot more higher level data to arrive at those assessed valuations, which is why you often see a purchase price and a closed purchase price still not match what ultimately is the next reassessment, even if it's within like a year or so. It's only one small piece of the data that they're evaluating. So the answer is not necessarily to your question, but you know, as far as the rest of the market is concerned, if you're chucking an extra $25K onto the purchase price, that moves the market for other similar properties, right? Yeah. So You're wanting to you know, increase the closed purchase price of that property. That's now going to become a comp for the next appraiser, yeah, and so on and so forth. And you know, you get a real domino effect.
I think the thing that's wild too is you've got all these things, and you know, Patrick and I, and Charlie, you may see this to a certain extent because I know you're in the market, but I think it's wild that you've got all these properties there right now that are being, I say artificially loosely, but you see these properties that are being artificially inflated due to whatever it might be. But these are great comps for people that are going to be trying to sell July, August, September. Appraisals probably, in my opinion, won't be an issue later on in the end of the year because you've got so much price inflation, I guess, right now. So, you know, it's always hard selling your home at the beginning of the year because you're competing against 6 months ago's market. And this has, once again, changed in the last 2 to 3 years. But, you know, I've seen 4 or 5 properties this year not appraise out, and it wasn't an issue for people that are doing well. But if you don't have money on hand, you're kind of just stuck.
I want to ask Joey about appraisal season and, yeah, you know, to tell
where
us
where I was going
to
go.
Hey, it is appraisal season, isn't it?
So tell us the ebb and flow of the, you know, when do you tend to see more low appraisals as opposed to other parts of the year?
Definitely in the summer. Spring, summer. That's obviously when the market starts getting hotter. There's more competition. People start offering over asking. They're offering appraisal gap waivers. So you start seeing appraisals come in short. I actually am dealing with one right now.
Why do they come in short?
They come in short because they don't have comps from the previous 6 months to support the new values that people are fighting over, right? So when the market cools, obviously values cool. When the market's hot, contracts come in hot, and you're comping, you're comparing your hot contract versus a cool market. So that's what you're dealing with.
So if you know, I'm not, you know, you're not an appraiser, so I want to preface this question by saying if the answer is I don't know, I will understand why. But it would make sense to me that if I were designing an appraisal from the ground up, I would want to take into account the seasonality of, I would want to take into account everything you just said when I am trying to figure out what the true value of a parcel of real estate is. So, you know, what time of year is it? You know, do I allow for a little bit of fudge factor? You know, are there some indicators I could use to indicate how hot a market is, so to speak? Does any of that come into play, or are they just strictly looking at past 6 months comps?
They have to look at the most recent data they can to try to support the value. And appraisers try to get value. I mean, people assume that appraisers are out there to kill deals, and they're not.
They are.
It feels that way, right? It does. But I mean, they have to live with the market.
I've seen some appraisals, man, that you just scratch your head about.
I've seen some bad appraisals. It happens. Not every appraiser is, you know, the PJ Loftus of praising, you know what I mean? So
a little bit of inside baseball there.
I like it. I like it. but they also know that the lenders have to run these appraisals through Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac valuation systems too. So even if they try to come in hot, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, they're using data that they have available, and they run a score analysis, 1 through 5, one being the lowest risk of overvaluation and 5 being the highest risk of overvaluation. If you're coming in hot at a 5, you're going to have a problem closing even if the appraisal came in at value, because there's data that says that the appraisal is overvalued, right? So I try not to even say an appraisal is in at value until I have the risk score first, because mm-hmm. that can create issues. We have to go back to the appraiser, like, hey, can you explain why you can support this value? I mean, there's lenders that won't even close on something that's rated at a 5.
You guys made me just think about something, though, when you're, you know, talking about the prices going up because people are overbidding on these things. Doesn't it make it easier, let's just say somebody, you know, had to pay PMI and they're getting a low mortgage, or let's say there's a refinance that's coming up because the rates do drop in a year or two from now, but the cost went up and the comps went up, doesn't that make it easier to refi?
Maybe.
Always a maybe. Joey?
Yeah, I mean, because, well, Joey, you predict the future so that we can prepare for the opposite, please.
Didn't I already do that? Was that what I did earlier today, right? No, I'm sorry, I'm stuck on appraisals. What?
So let me ask you a different question, because there's one that was kind of leading me to the conversation was leading me in this direction. So more and more, I'm seeing situations where lenders are able to use alternatives to an appraisal. So
expound on that. What do you mean by that?
Well, where an appraisal is not required, and I'm seeing more and more instances of that. And that's definitely something I'm sure, Joey, you emphasize when you are making that phone call to back up the offer that was just submitted, which I got a story for you after you're done talking about this. But you know, tell me more, take me through some of the details as far as, you know, how do I position myself so I might not have to be affected by an appraisal?
So appraisal waivers are offered directly through automated underwriting. Once an address is attached, once the actual purchase price is attached, the down payment is known. So it's essentially Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are running a risk-based analysis on the entire file. And if they are okay with the value based on the data that they have available, they can offer what's called a property inspection waiver. It's a PIW in nerdy mortgage terms.
A pew.
But that means that, yeah, the pew.
Pew, pew.
All right. So can't get one pew without two. So Fannie and Freddie are accepting of that information. Does it always happen? No. I mean, I'm literally working with my sister right now. Then she is buying in Wisconsin at a 30%. She's putting 70% down on this house. We didn't get an appraisal waiver.
No
right?
way. That's not real.
830 credit score, ran it through Fannie and Freddie. Didn't get an appraisal waiver. I thought for sure we would get one.
That's
get
annoying. One.
19% debt ratio. Didn't get one. So
it's because it's Wisconsin.
I do blame Wisconsin. Yeah. You know, I think
that is a perfectly reasonable thing to do. Joey, I told you I was going to tell you a story real quick. I had an agent yesterday call me and ask me if I would do a little intro phone call to the listing agent on a house that they really wanted to get their bid accepted, really wanted to make it look like we had a real stitch together team on the buy side. And I did. I called and I did, you know, I channeled my inner Joey Matt. Use the VA loan nerd, VA loan nerd on all socials. And you know, I had a little chit chat. I even invited her to be a guest on the show. So I wonder if she'll take us up on it and we can talk more about, you know, whether or not this had a measurable impact. But the offer did get accepted, I found out a little bit later. So I can only take full credit for that happening. And it had nothing to do with the work done prior to me making a 5-minute phone call.
I don't even know how to respond to that.
So I'm entering, you know, Joey Matthews territory. And now I wonder, I hope this is not going to become a thing where I have to constantly be doing this. But she did remark that I've now probably
I've
ruined.
I've never had an attorney do that. That's what she said.
Well, she's like, yeah, that's what she said. She's like, you know, the attorneys I work with on my buy sides are going to hate you for introducing this thing that I may decide to utilize myself. And I said, you know what? Good. Good. For all the grief good that great. All of the rest of you in the real estate attorney bar have caused me, I'm glad to finally give some back.
You know what? Everybody has a choice. And if you're going to do something that helps your client and it makes you more valuable, I commend you. And if everybody else has to chase you, let them chase.
Yeah. Why not? It's a phone call, you know? It doesn't take anything. And I can imagine a lot of lawyers being like, I don't do that. I'm sorry. I'm not
I don't have
that.
Time for that. Yeah.
I said that when they made us wear seatbelts. All right. I'm not going to do that.
Well, you're going to kill me. Charlie, that doesn't surprise me at all. Yeah, well, not my seatbelt.
I didn't want to wear rubber gloves when they first started doing that as a paramedic.
Camaro probably didn't have seatbelts.
I can remember the arguments, too. It was... I'm going to lose sensitivity of feeling the needle when I start the IV. I literally made that argument, for the rubber gloves because I didn't want to do it.
I can appreciate
no
where
max
you,
hoods,
you
air would, packs. I was way back in the fireman business before air packs.
I can understand, I can't go there. You lose sensitivity when you, never mind. for those of you who
back
are lost,
to the negotiations.
Do the math.
Cody, all right, Cody, what gives somebody leverage when they're negotiating?
On the sales side right now, you have 85% of it just by putting your place on the market, to be completely honest.
Competitively priced.
Yeah. Yes. I have seen things that are $100,000, $200,000 overpriced, and they say it's worth it. And it's like, well, it's worth what somebody's willing to pay. And if you've been on the market for even 9 days in this market, you priced it wrong. So as a seller, right now, take it while you can get it. It's good. As a buyer, a lot of it is just trying to be accommodating in this market, not showing up to an open house and being rude. Introducing yourself. I've actually advocated for people that, maybe their offer isn't as much, and I know just by meeting them that they're going to be easy to work with because they show up, they're polite, they're nice, their agent shows up with them, which doesn't happen very often. A lot of the homes that are going on the market right now aren't doing showings before Saturday or Sunday. They're condensing it all into 2 days. And I'm going to be honest, as a listing agent, that's not terrible. It's nice to just have a steady flow of people come in. You meet them, you can converse with them, you say the same spiel for 2 to 3 hours as opposed to showing up for 30 minutes here or there. And I know I'm going to get flack for that, but it is a streamlined experience, and this isn't going how it's going to be forever. But as a buyer, just be nice, be courteous. Put your best foot forward. So,
well, it's super nice for a seller, right? So, let's say you're selling your home.
Right now, they have the leverage.
Well, let's say you're selling your home, right? And it's you don't have the ability to sort of let the market cater to all of your needs. But right now, so you have this set aside time frame for the showings to take place. You have your open house, whatever it is, Whereas in another market where it's more even or even tilted toward the buyer, every time you have a showing, you got to schlep all of your three dogs into the back of the Subaru and tidy all the things up and put all your the things you don't want someone to notice away and you're doing that 3, 4, 5 times a week and that's a lot.
It's selling your home is genuinely like a great experience when you get the check or the wire into your account. Leading up to that, it's terrible. Your kid is sick at home and you're like, oh God, I've got to leave for 23 minutes and walk the dog while Timmy's sneezing and coughing and whatever else. So, Yeah,
there's something to that. Yeah, you talk about, I think that actual person-to-person connection, I think that is, that there's some real power to that. Because I think the obvious thing is, let's find out when the seller's ideal closing date is. Do they want post-close possession because they have not yet identified their replacement home? What other things can we do to sweeten the deal? Appraisal gap waiver, all that stuff. Yep. Any competent agent is going to be utilizing those levers to try to get to the, the finish line, or at least to the starting line of where you actually begin the due diligence. But that human-to-human contact, those connections, I would say are just as powerful as picking all of the exact terms that the seller's looking for.
I think one of the things that I've thought about in the past couple of weeks, I've got a couple, everybody has these clients where, you know, they waited to the last minute for whatever reason. And I've been there where you're like, I don't know if I'm going to rent or buy. And then they're like, I want to buy. And then we go tour a place and say there's a listing agent there. And they say, well, you know, I really need to move in 38 days. Whenever you say that, you're giving up all leverage because the listing agent knows, like, he's stuck here. He can't go out. He didn't extend his lease. He has to purchase this specific property. You just gave up everything because you slip of the lip for, you know.
Do you coach your clients?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Keep your mouth shut until we get out. And out yeah. beyond where the ring door.
Doorbell, yeah.
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 Yeah, because yeah, people will say, so like a question I'll often ask both my buyers and my sellers when we're talking about the inspection is, you know, did they say anything about, for example, redoing a bathroom, or, you know, is it, do they plan on doing extensive remodeling? Because if that's the case, and I got a request for, you know, I want, you know, these credits for, you know, this and this, and it's in a room that we know that they're already planning on, you know, demoing and redoing, you know, before we even got that request, guess what? Not getting it.
Yeah. I have a transaction with Patrick right now where they came to me. They had another agent. They fired their agent. They came to me. I notified them and said, hey, you know, just so you're aware, when we walk in, there is cameras. I looked at the listing photos. There's a camera in this corner. Let's not chat until we get out past the fire hydrant or whatever. You know, yeah, it's pretty intensive. And I think buyer's agents, obviously, in the last 2 months have been under scrutiny because people don't think that we do anything. But the way that people have learned to shop for homes in the last 2 to 3 years has changed. My job is, and I once again, I'm going to get flack for this as well, but like, my job is not to sit there and scroll through photos and say, like, this is perfect for this person. You know what you're shopping for. I'm here to tinker and tweak whatever needs to be done and, you know, network with other agents and find out if there's something that's not on the market. My job is to make sure that you're safe, you're protected, negotiate my butt off, and make sure that, you know, we're staying in line as buyers and or sellers. I don't know. I think it has changed. And I think, you know, 15 years ago when you had to look through a catalog of homes in a Rolodex book.
That was my first house. They did all that. They showed me the houses that I was going to look. I couldn't find anything on my own. The internet really didn't exist.
Right. Exactly. And that was great for then. It's changed. You know, the place that we bought wasn't in my radar at all because I didn't want to live here. And eventually I shifted my radius over a little bit. If I was my own realtor at that point, my realtor, me, wouldn't have said, hey, look over here, because it wasn't even an idea. So people, I think, want to look on their own time, and I'm not going to be here to babysit you. I'm here to educate and work with you, not, you know.
Cody, give us your contact information. How do people get hold of you, please?
Yeah. Cody Ship, Dreamtown Realty, 312-450-0665.
One more time, slower.
312-450-0665.
I'm going to get you Joey's magical music there. Patrick, please.
All right. So before we went on air, I was inflating this.
That's interesting.
This little campfire, and you know, I wanted to create a little tension. You know, like, what's he doing there? And then I just ignored it for, you know,
it's still there.
The reason is because
you don't need to blow that up for me to ignore you.
I'm in the presence of two of the finest firefighters. You know, that I think we've ever known.
That's not a real fire.
That's for the best, to be honest. Okay. My wife and I did manage to get the entire fire brigade called to our condo Saturday night because my dad and my stepmom sent us a little like indoor outdoor fire feature thing.
Yeah, nice.
That we put on our balcony.
The solar stove?
No, it's just like a little thing to look at, and it's, you know, whatever. Okay. I don't know what it's called. Something from Sharper Image, I'm sure. That I don't know. Anyways, my wife was like, hey, let's, you know, light it up. So I lit it up, and I went inside to watch the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and all of a sudden, my wife comes in, and she's like, I think they're here for us. And by them, she pointed down, and there's like literally three trucks on our side of the street, two on the other side. Like, there's like at real full-size fire trucks. One of Well, I think there was a tanker.
A Suburban. Don't forget the Suburban.
There was a couple Suburbans. Yeah. I mean, there was the Suburban. There were no less than 10 vehicles here. And I was like, nah, God, there's no way. And then in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, yeah, probably. But I didn't want my wife to freak out. And so, I calmly went out and I, put the thing on top to put the fire out. And then about 5 minutes later, knock, knock, knock on the door. And hello. Do you happen to have Christmas lights on your balcony? Come on in. I know you're going to want to come see. We got a call from across the street that there was some sparking of the Christmas lights. I don't know what these people saw, and I don't know what they told the 911 operator, but they had all the firefighters there. I swear to you.
Sparking of Christmas lights?
Yeah. So anyways, I was like, and I dropped Charlie's name. It didn't have any effect whatsoever.
They called me.
I took him out to the balcony. I showed him. And my wife is, cowering in the corner, trying to be as invisible as possible so that I have to deal with the entire situation. And, I mentioned to her afterwards, I was like, I saw what you did over there. And, you owe me big time for that. But
is it safe to say that fires are prohibited from your balconies?
Well, yeah, if any of the board members are listeners to the Home Buyers Hour, I'm probably going to get a $250 fine for telling this story on the air. My sister, because she's hilarious, my wife told her the story. And so my sister, the next day, four of these arrived from Amazon, and she said this might be a little safer than what our dad sent you. So
hats off to her.
The good news is, not like the last time I had the fire brigade called on me, they at least this time didn't have to walk all, this had been 12 flights. That time they had to walk up 29 flights to come and see that I just burnt a pork chop and left the front door open so that the smoke would waft into the hallway.
Did they ask you to take, or did you ask them to take their boots off?
I've seen that.
I've had that happen to me. We had a fire alarm, and your boots are dirty. Take them off.
Let's fight fire in our socks. Yeah.
The man in 40 pounds of gear with an axe in his hand, I didn't feel much like he was going to be amenable to my request. But I did my best to schmooze this fella, and I did tell him that story on the way out to say, see, it could have been worse. And he's just, he didn't think it was that funny somehow. But they did take the elevator back down. So.
No.
Sorry.
So how do they get home with you? We'll get back to that. And by the way, how many of these free fires are you giving away as a contest today?
The first caller to whatever the number is on there.
Or whoever texts on our state, or call us in here at 773-594-8781.
And if you want to find me, head down to State and Ida B. Wells. Look up for the Christmas lights and the flame, and that's how you find me.
What is wrong with you, Joey? Joey, please save this show. Give us your contact info, please.
I'm not getting invited back.
Why?
Why?
You can call or text me at 630-235-2405. You can find me at thevaloannerd.com. You can find me across all the social medias as at thevaloannerd, where you can also find images on Instagram of me fighting fire.
My true American hero, Joey. I love you to death. My name is Charlie Belfontaine. I own Chicagoland Home Inspectors. Our phone number is 312-544-9180. Repeating, 312-544-9180. We also own Home Inspection University of Illinois. And if you're interested in entering the home inspection profession, please reach out to me. That website is www.huil.com, huil.com. And Cody, we're going to come back to you. And I guess we got enough of round one and fires. And we do have a winner, by the way. Somebody texted in.
Stop. Who is it?
I want to name Charlie. WCPT's promotions guy. I have to nix that fire. Oh, wait a minute. He canceled us. That's the producer here who said, no way on giving away the fire thing. I think it's just too valuable.
Right, I get to you.
No, I got a thumbs down. It's too
It's just what's wrong with you guys?
So, all right, here's the best fireman joke I got. All right, so in order to have a fire, you need, they use the acronym FHOC, and that stands for Fuel, Heat, Oxygen, and Fire
Charlie?
Chief. No, oh. Fire Chief. You remove any one of those four, and the fire always goes out. All right? So let the firemen do their jobs, and let that suburban guy park a block away. So, Cody, let's go with round two. Yep. All right? And yep. Sometimes I get people go, what do you mean round two? There's no two rounds of negotiations.
It's
round
a knockdown fight. It's a knockdown drag out. I think one of the things, I'll start with something, and then I'll jump into what happens. So, I think people need to realize, myself included, that negotiations don't, nobody has to like die. It's a house, you know, you're fighting over a couple thousand dollars. Maybe it is something substantial where it's upwards of 10,000, but everybody's working towards the same goal. Nobody really wants to kill a transaction, with the exception of one of my clients in the past. I'll leave him out of this, but, round two of negotiations should be a reasonable request list, meaning things that don't work, just ask for them to be fixed. Maybe actually, contradicting myself, ask for money so that you can hire the person to do it the way that you want it to be done, as opposed to Joe Schmo off the street. I will say Patrick is awesome at this, and one of the reasons that I've started using Patrick, and Charlie, I think you're great at this as well, is preparing people for this stuff. You know, when people don't feel like they're being blindsided by $5,000-$6,000 in repairs, it's the best thing that could happen. You can say, okay, let's break it out. This is a $250 fix. Ask for $300, ask for, you know, a couple extra dollars so that you can have somebody qualified come out, as opposed to some guy that's never changed a light bulb. So yeah, there's two rounds of negotiations. Patrick takes it upon himself to go through the inspection report, as do I with the clients, and Charlie yourself as well, where you say, okay, let's all sit down, think about this, put dollars and cents to an item, and go from here.
Well, here's the one problem. I just had this recently. A client was telling me, well, what should they fix? You know, and literally those exact same words. And I'm like, it's not a principle thing. You know, and that's what I was trying to explain to him with these negotiations. It's not a right or wrong or a principle. You got to do this. You know, it all depends on how much leverage you have. And that's where I'm ignorant. All right. Or I think naive is a better word. I don't know the market.
You lack the sufficient information to really give. To give the right advice. I mean, you know, and that's often a question that gets asked. You know, it's either a question like shouldn't they do that? You know, no one's required to do anything. You know, they can say no, and each individual is different. So you know, you might have all of your, you know, your best negotiating tactics. You might have all kinds of, you know, they really, you know, this is a winner, and they might just come back and say no. Why did I write, you know, three paragraphs about exactly why what I'm asking for is fair, and you know why you're being obstinate? And they come back and they go, great, cool, you know, they may not even read the three paragraphs. I mean, I'm still going to put the three paragraphs there because, you know, I'm going to put my best foot forward. And you know, at the end of the day, you know, you can negotiate and push the seller as hard as they're willing to be pushed. And at that point, when you realize that, you know, you've reached the end of the line, it's then for the buyer to make the decision. You know, am I comfortable with where things are at, and do I want to move forward, or is this outside of my comfort zone? And you know, far more often than not, fortunately, you know, the buyer sort of wraps their mind around it. And you know, the more information that they possess through Charlie, your expertise, through my expertise, through Cody's expertise, all along the way, they're being coached as far as, you know, this is the information you need as a real estate purchaser to make a decision you feel comfortable with. You'll
I'll
arrive.
Add you in there, Joey. Your expertise as well.
Joey, all Joey does is math. Math and Google. He tells us that every week. Joey says his job is super easy. Yeah. And he says everything is available on Google. And there's nothing to it.
Yeah.
Now,
definitely. Yeah.
Let me just say,
and money's free.
This is so hard.
I sound like I'm being insulting to Joey, but really what I'm saying is not meant to be insulting. It's meant to really highlight that Joey's got his process so dialed in that he has made it easy because as a result, you know, that it took a lot of work
up to this point to make that an easy job for him.
What I picture when you're saying this, Patrick, is that scene in what's that movie with Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, Goodwill Hunting.
Good Will Hunting.
Do you think it's this? Is it always this easy? Do you think I like it being this easy?
It's not your fault, Cody.
It's not your fault.
It's not your fault, Cody.
Oh, I cried.
It's not your fault, Cody.
All right, how do you handle the smoke alarms or the GS? Let's focus on one item. We got old smoke alarm or no smoke alarms in any of the buildings, and they're required.
Mm-hmm. Amazon.
You know, this is, I want to hear from you guys. What do you tell your clients when they're like, well, they're supposed to have those there?
So, $30 bucks a piece on Amazon is what I tell them.
So I usually ask my client, I start off everything by asking two questions. Number one, do you think this is a fair request? Number two, how would you respond if somebody asked the same of you?
And you're talking to a seller right now.
A buyer. And or seller. Okay. I say the same thing.
All right.
Yeah, putting yourself in the other person's shoes, by the way, is almost an essential. And it's something I do. I do it so much, I don't even realize I'm doing it anymore. Yeah. And that is, if you are going to have any success in negotiation, that needs to be the first skill that you develop.
Yeah. So if it's something small, right? Smoke alarms and smoke detectors and CO2 detectors, there's a couple different ways to handle it. If it's battery operated, take yourself down to Home Depot, buy the double pack for $48 or whatever it costs, hang it up yourself, you saved yourself $150. If it's something that's hardwired in, that's a completely different issue. That's something that I would like to have somebody that's qualified do. But, you know, if it's a GFCI, here's $30 in this market. Eat the $30 cost. I'll give you $100 and have my handyman who is licensed come out and take care of it. Don't worry about it. Pick your battles, and that's not one that you want to, that's not a hill you want to die on.
Thank you. And that's the same conversation I try to have with our clients as well. And I know age comes into a lot of stuff as well. Like, you know, I just had one that had a 24-year-old furnace.
It's old,
you know, but again, we could tell how old it really is. You know, compare, and when I'll explain that in a minute. Mm-hmm. And then we also had like a 20-year-old water heater, and the air conditioner was over 20 years old. All right, so
the water heater is only one of those three that I'm really worried about.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Tell me why that's the only one.
Because that's the one that's most likely to fail at that stage of the game, the soonest at least. Water heaters don't last as long as furnaces and AC on average. So,
and they do a lot of damage if they start spewing water right. All over the place. You got to catch those leaks.
Right. Yeah, it's, you know, if it's doing the old gurgle gurgle, you know, it's time to look pretty closely. And you know, with smoke detectors, to me that's a homeowner like day one thing, right? So the moment I'm moving in. I'm putting in new smoke detectors. If it's
there's
a battery operated,
I tell my clients that are day one. Yeah,
I think
do.
I know it. Yep. Yeah. Go with, say it. Say
so
it.
Smoke detectors, and even if it's a hardwired, here's a little tip for you on the hardwired ones. Get the same brand as what's already up there because it'll probably have the same harness.
Yeah.
And because I learned that one the hard way.
Fire department chief over there, huh?
Well, yeah. Let's say, you know, fire expert here. Fire starting expert, unfortunately. Smoke detectors / CO detectors, that's a day one. You know, they're meant to last about 5 years. I've heard five, I've heard 10. And then, you know, I stick my foot in my mouth when I'm talking to people. I go, no one ever, you know, replaces them until they're giving them a hard time. And then, you know, whenever I say that, I'll be talking to the one person who fastidiously replaces them every 5 years and has like an alert on their.
What are the other two things you always say at closing table? What are the things you change?
Change the locks.
Yep.
Good. That's two.
Change the toilet seats.
Yep.
That's three.
Yep.
And then.
What's yours, Charlie? What's four?
Four for me is get the ductwork cleaned.
Okay,
that's
so
huge to me.
What does that cost?
I don't know, $150. Well, it's $400 to $500 if you pay the duct cleaning companies to remove and replace the registers.
Oh,
for some reason they charge like $3,000 for every register that they have to take off and put on it. I don't know what the number is. Okay. Obviously, I'm making
funny.
It up. But it runs it all up. No, I would do that myself. But I get it if you don't want to do it, and that's not that much money.
It makes
sense. It's like $20. $10 to take it off, $10 to put it back on for each one that they do to clean it. But you can do it yourself if you want to save some money.
I've heard conflicting thoughts on it where somebody's like, let's be honest, it's not worth it.
Doing what?
Cleaning your air ducts.
So here's my rationale, especially if it's an older building. And, you know, I'm a huge proponent of let's say, practices. And if we get a house that was built before 1970 and before anybody yells at me, yes, I know it's 1978. But in all reality, we stopped using lead paint in houses around 1970. Okay. All right. Yeah. They just banned it in 78. But if that house has ever undergone any sort of construction, now you got a whole bunch of lead dust and debris that's inside your ductwork, and that's blowing it around. And let's face it, you know, people are going to have babies. Women are getting pregnant. You don't know that you're breathing this stuff in, and inhalation is a major, you know, method or avenue to get that lead into your body. Yeah. And it does cross the placenta. It does stop the human brain from developing.
Do you know?
So that's a big deal to me.
A fun fact, or not so fun fact, is that leaded gasoline cost us, I think they started putting lead in gasoline in the 30s. And then I remember when I was a kid, you could still get leaded gasoline. And then that kind of petered out sometime in the 80s, I believe. But it cost us, on average, societally, about 5 IQ points. Due to the fact that there was so much lead in the emissions and in the atmosphere that we were all breathing in. I mean, we collectively, societally got stupider.
It explains why we are where we are, right?
Well, at least my generation.
It explains why millennials and Gen Z are so much smarter than the boomers.
Oh, God, we're not doing this, are we?
We're doing it right now. You know, us boomers still vote, and you're out.
Yep.
All right? That's all there is to it.
I think Charlie took that personally.
I'm the only boomer in the room. Of course I'm going to take it personally.
As far as Charlie is concerned, you know, you would sprinkle little lead paint chips on your Frosted Flakes to make it a little sweeter.
Charlie, I do have a question for you. Back when lead was used, I've always been told it was amazing for paint.
We still use it today.
Well, yeah, but...
No, we do. Water towers, guardrails, anything that's outside, out in the open, it's still used today.
I didn't know that.
It's a fantastic paint. You know, it sticks, it lasts a long time, but because it's
a
health hazard, it is sweet tasting. How do you know? I don't know.
Well, that is why it's so dangerous for kids, is because kids, they taste it and it's sweet, and they're like, oh, man, give me some more of that.
I always tell people, like, you know, if your home was built before 78, you have lead in your home.
Treat it like you do.
Right, yeah.
That's the bottom line. Don't try to figure out. I get asked to do lead paint testing all the time.
Do you?
And I do everything that I can to talk my clients out of it. Same thing with lead and water in the water pipes.
Because that does put a dot on your home, right? Like, once it's been identified, it's kind of like a blemish forever.
I think it's there. I don't. Every house that was built from the 60s earlier,
right,
you're going to have lead varnish, lead paint. You're going to have asbestos tiles, asbestos glue.
Asbestos
siding. You're going to have a lot of this stuff in there. It's going to be there. And why try to see if it is or isn't? There's ways to live with lead paint safely. And that's it. Let's just educate ourselves on how to do that. You keep everything well painted. You know, don't get those ductwork clean. Again, I'm a huge advocate for that one.
And paint over all the switches and over all the outlets.
Yeah, that'll
That'll really keep it encapsulated effectively.
So Charlie, this is how it works, audience. Patrick takes me out to breakfast, feeds me with like 4 or 5 cups of coffee, gets me all rattled and juiced up, and then he throws all these things out here to trigger me and watch me spew and see if he gets me to swear on the radio. And then he's laughing at me. And he's getting damn near close. Yeah, we call that the Pooster. You know, we actually had a guy in the firehouse. That was his nickname. You know,
what do you got to do to get that?
You got to stir a lot of poop.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know what he said about you.
Exactly. Yeah. Comrade Doblers, you know. Store high and transport. That's where that word is an acronym, just to give you a heads up.
Got it.
Store high and transport. They used to ship manure on wooden boats, and when it was down low, it would get wet, let off the gases, and then somebody would light up a cigar or something, and it would explode. So they would have to store the manure up high in the boats. Yeah, yeah, this is a learning show, people.
I'm not sure.
Fasten your seatbelts.
As often as you tell that story, I still am not sure I believe it.
The answer is on Wikipedia. That's where it is.
Well, if only Google could actually give me results that were useful, which it does not these days.
Oh, man, here we go.
I don't know. I searched for the best attorney in the Chicagoland area, and I got a good one.
I paid good money for that SEO.
All right, so go back to what we talked about with the negotiations. So there's some things that, and I guess for me, I see the same thing over and over and over again. And the home inspection. And this was something that we started doing a couple of years ago. And I just wish I would have done it 30 years ago when I started in this business. It's amazing what I take as simple, easy understanding that somebody else will take as, oh my God, I'm going to die. Yeah. All right. And it's like, how do I explain to somebody, hey, listen, I want you to know that 95% of the houses, if not 100%, we're going to find these same common defects, yeah. All right? I sell a long list. I promise a long list. I'm going to deliver a long list. But that doesn't mean that all these things are bad items. We're just looking to go ahead and document as much as we can. But I just don't want to scare somebody away from a house.
Yeah.
And I was afraid I was actually doing that until I started doing these calls. And even, I don't have all the clients. They don't take me up on this. We're about 50%.
Really?
Really. And which is cool, you know, but it's still, you know, just to explain these things. And it's amazing to watch them and see their eyes light up when they figure this stuff out. So
I think the big thing is every single time I go to an inspection, I say the same exact thing. Remember, no inspection is perfect. Even on new construction, I mean, eventually it becomes it after you put the blue tape on it, but, you know, you're going to find some little stuff. There's probably going to be mold. Don't be scared of mold unless it's, you know, taking over the entire home. I saw one of those yesterday. I made sure not to touch anything, but
the Realtor magazine just sent me an article to prove about mold.
To prove what?
Proofread. Oh, you know, post my 2 cents, and I'm like, this is wrong. I got all snotty.
You're an expert witness. There you go.
Oh, my goodness. You know, you don't have to be an expert. Just there's a few things to get right. But I'm sorry I interrupted. Yeah,
no, that's it. I think a lot of it, and Patrick does like the final call with clients on a lot of this. So like I'll prep them and say, hey, you're going to have a call with him. I probably know about 95% of what's going to happen, but I want you guys to have an unbiased third party that isn't me discuss this with you.
Yeah, you know, taking the time to walk someone through it, you know, to the extent that they want
everybody,
to be.
Yeah.
Not, you know, everyone is allowed and is encouraged to choose their level of involvement. Like you said, half of your clients take you up on that extra Zoom call and half don't. I have some clients where, you know, as we're discussing things, it's quite clear that they have a really good handle on what it is. And I don't need to explain, you know, I don't need to explain taxes to everybody. Not everyone needs their handheld. Yeah. First-time homebuyer, absolutely. We're going to go through the first-time homebuyer spiel, and it's going to take some extra time most often. Whereas with someone who's been through it before, I don't have to explain to them that real estate taxes are paid in 2 installments, and them, you know, all of that stuff. They go, yeah, I get it. Cool, great. We don't have to. I don't have to talk down to you, you know. So, but yeah, taking the time, and you know, I'll repeat myself from earlier, which is to say that. Giving someone enough information so that they feel comfortable making the best decision for themselves.
That's our job.
That's where our success lies. And, you know, sometimes it feels like our success lies in getting a transaction to the closing table. That is a byproduct of having a good process in general.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. Patrick, give us your, we're getting towards the end, so give us your contact info, please.
Well, I've got another story. No. Find me on social media. Loftus_law. Find me on TikTok. Find me at Loftus Law.
Sounds good. Cody, please.
On social, Ship Homes, SHIPPHOMES. Phone number 312-450-0665.
And if I had to ask you one thing, you know, and one of my favorite three words is why choose me? Why should I hire you over the other 74,999 real estate agents in Illinois?
It's a great question. I'm nice.
What? You just held up like one finger for a minute left, yeah. And you ask him a 10-minute question.
One thing.
You have a problem.
Yeah.
I do have a problem. One thing.
Honesty. I'll be honest. I'll tell you to back out. I'll tell you to move forward. That's it.
And it's actually a pretty powerful thing. Joey, can you give us your contact?
I sure can. My name is Joey Matthews, the VA Loan Nerd. You can call or text me at 630-235-2405. Wow, what did just happen? 2405. You can find me on all the social media as at the VA Loan Nerd. And yeah, there you go.
Patrick's holding up your mug that you gave him, which has the good old QR code on there. My name is Charlie Belfontaine. I'm with Chicagoland Home Inspectors. Thank you for listening to us. Another thank you to Devin Tingle, our producer. And again, my name is Charlie, and I am out.